All right, that's my cue. How you doing today? All right. It's Vegas. So I'm really impressed that on the last day of the show at 9 a.m., we're filling up the room. So kudos to you guys for getting up and making it out. So I really appreciate it. Thank you for coming. So just making sure I'm in the right session. You should probably do that too, just in case. All right, so my name is Scott Jamison. I'm going to tell you the story about Bob. Everybody know who Bob is? Yeah, that's Bob right there. So why does Bob look sad? Anybody know? What was that? Profits are down. That's actually SharePoint adoption. Yeah. You've been there, I know. So this session is about how many people are on SharePoint 2010 right now? Pretty much everybody in the room. So how many people are thinking about, should I go to SharePoint 2013? Should I go to the cloud? Should I stay on 2010? Is that good? That's good, because that's what this session is about. So we're on good terms already. I like that. So let's talk about Bob. Why is Bob sad? Well, I mentioned SharePoint adoption is sort of in this downish thing. And the reason is that originally Bob deployed SharePoint 2010, right? He was a part of the executive team sort of overseeing the SharePoint deployment. And at first it was great, right? People were all jazzed up about this new SharePoint thing. And so, you know, he got little medals with a one on it. I'm not sure who give those out anymore, unless you're like five or something. But Bob got one though, so don't make fun of Bob. And, you know, he thought things were good because, you know, life was great at first and all that. And the problem was users came up to him and said, hey, you know what, we actually like the SharePoint thing, we want more, which confused him because he actually saw sort of this uneven adoption, and people were complaining a little bit. So they liked it and they used it, but they wanted it to be better. So he was a little confused because he said, well, what do you mean? And they said, well, you know, we have a bunch of things that sort of, we like the tool, but sometimes it's hard to find things. We have mobile devices and I can't get to SharePoint from the internet, and you know, so they have all these issues that they have. So they want more of it, but they just want it to be different and better in a way that he understands, right? So Bob kind of knows what, you know, they're asking for. So Bob's thinking, all right, SharePoint 2013. Microsoft always says the next version is the ultimate one, even the last version was supposed to be the ultimate one, but you know, the one that fixes all the problems, the silver bullet, all that stuff. So Bob's pretty high on 2013. How many people are pretty much, yeah, I'm gonna go to 2013? Okay, good. So I'll convince you here not to. No, just kidding. So Bob's a little confused, though, because he wants to go to 2013, but he's not exactly sure what his, you know, risks are, what his concerns are, et cetera. Okay, so we're going to help Bob through this problem. So everybody, who's on board with helping Bob? All right, let's help Bob. So let's help Bob. Let's give him a flower, you know, maybe a kiss, something like that, whatever works. All right, so quickly about me, I'm with a company called Jornada. I'm a SharePoint MVP, and I wrote the little, or I co-wrote with Sue and Chris the purple book right there. Who has either the green or purple book? Anybody? I'm curious. All right, a bunch of people. So I will give away, we gave away so far about 45 copies of the purple book at the show, so if you didn't get one, you missed out. But I will give away one ebook version of the purple one in the session today. All right, so let's plan out what our journey looks like, because getting to SharePoint 2013 or SharePoint Online, depending on you know what your you know the best thing for you to do is really a journey. And you know, unlike email and things like that, where you kind of roll it out and it just sticks and works, and you make sure it doesn't the green light doesn't turn into a red one kind of thing. SharePoint's a lot more complicated than that in terms of care and feeding. So you have to look at SharePoint like a journey over time, right? Because at the end of the day, it's really just a tool that facilitates content storage and collaboration, really, at the end of the day, right? So no matter if you have a portal, if you're doing social, if you're doing search, it's really all the same thing. It's managing this sort of, you know, unstructured or semi-structured content in a way that you want it to be accessible freely, et cetera. So I'm gonna break today's talk into four key areas, right? Number one, should I upgrade? Like, what are the compelling reasons why I want to do that, first of all? Number two, okay, so I have 2010 today. can I do anything with it? Should I keep it? Should I, you know, what can I leverage from that and carry it forward, right? So I'm not throwing away my current investment. And then if you do decide to go, what do you prepare for? So maybe last time you learned a few things, and this time you're going to be more prepared because you're going to carry those, you know, experiences forward. And finally, you know, talk about your SharePoint journey, right? So this is an executive session, if you didn't read the little thing, right? So I'm not going to drill into, hey, this is the error you might get on page 51 of the upgrade if your content database is more than 52 gig. And, you know, I'm not going into that level of detail. I'm really going to talk about, from a planning and strategy perspective, the things you want to think about. So you're probably coming in with some questions. You'll probably leave with maybe a few answers, but even more questions that I'm going to raise on your behalf, right? All right, so let's jump into the first section, which is, you know, should I upgrade? Why would I want to, you know, why would I want to do that? By the way, this clock is not running in the back. If someone wants to turn it on for me, the little timer thingy, anybody? Bueller? All right, well, somebody let me know when time's up. All right, rock and roll. All right, what's that? Whatever. We're all friends here. We'll figure it out. All right, so the first question is, should I move to SharePoint 2013, right? I mean, it's a valid question, right? And I think you shouldn't just assume you want to, because in asking yourself the question, you probably unravel, like, okay, what's the key motivation? What's going to make me more successful? All that stuff, right? And so let's go through some of the reasons that I think SharePoint 2013 warrants an upgrade from 2010. So the first one is you do get better productivity and adoption, and mainly because the product has a couple of key features that I think are really important. One is there's end-user improvements around, you know, drag and drop in the browser, a simpler UI in a lot of ways, a cleaner UI, et cetera. There's also easier sharing, so I can go into a document library, a site, and hit the share button, and I can share things with other people. Of course, does everybody know the share button? Right, so this basically puts the user permissions concept, or just security permissions in general, to the forefront and says, hey, user, you can share this document library or this document or whatever with another person in the company. The upside is it eases end-user ability to do that. From an IT perspective, it's a little scary, though, because it gives the users one more way to, A, add permissions to, you know, an already potentially complex environment, and B, they can start doing things like setting item-level security on lots and lots of, you know, pieces of content. So you just got to be careful of what that share button does, for example. Another one is Office Online, right? When you get into sort of Office Web Apps, which is now sort of Office Online in an online branding sense, that integration, when it works well and you've set it up correctly, is a really great experience for, you know, quickly perusing a document and, you know, I could be on a kiosk and don't need Office, that kind of thing. And then the third one is mobile support. SharePoint 2013 adds really, really good support for two scenarios. One is lots of different browsers. In fact, the funny part is SharePoint now works better in Chrome than it does in IE in 2013, which is kind of funny. And I think it's really because IE's, well, I'm not a Microsoft conference, I'll just reserve my judgment. So I'm about to get like struck down by the Microsoft, you know, sniper up there. But I could say those things cannot work for Microsoft. See, that's the beauty of it. So mobile support. The other piece is there's a lot of great mobile support. The browser compatibility also lends itself to devices where you can, you know, pinch and expand and all that stuff. And you've got a really nice, clean, HTML-compatible interface where there's a lot less of the sort of the old table-based SharePoint stuff that really screws up the UI, especially in, you know, in a form factor that is smaller than a regular screen and whatnot. So you also get mobile detection, so you can actually redirect users to a different size page and things like that. Another one is social. So what's interesting is how many people do any kind of social in SharePoint today? Are you guys all using 2010 for that? Or Yammer? How many people are Yammer? How many people are SharePoint 2010 social features? How many people are something else? NewsGator. NewsGator, okay. So that's SharePoint 2010 with NewsGator bolted on, basically. Yep. So gets a little confusing because most people with 2010, right, have NewsGator if they want real social. Most people with 2013 said, well, I don't need NewsGator because I could just use the advanced social features in SharePoint 2013. But then there's Yammer. So there's sort of these three things you can do social with. And I'll tell you right now, you should, if you're not doing social yet, wait and do Yammer. Just that's my personal opinion, mainly because NewsGator, not a good upgrade story there. And then SharePoint 2013 won't upgrade into Yammer necessarily, right? So you want to be careful of that. So if you're jumping into social now, you might be better off to wait and do Yammer. Or if you're not planning to go to Yammer, you can keep 2013. But really, think about Yammer being the future from a Microsoft perspective. Okay? That's not Microsoft telling you that. It's me and my professional opinion. So just to take note. And then there's better search. So one of the things that 2013 added was the FAST technology, which used to be a separate deployment, is baked into the search service application in 2013. So there's not two different search service applications, right? One that's FAST and one that's 2013. It's all one thing now. And the nice thing is you actually get better search, and it's more powerful, more improved. How many people were in my session yesterday? So we know from yesterday's session that search is not a silver bullet, right? Even in 2013, there's still things that can trip you up. And if you want to learn that, you can go watch yesterday's session. But the idea being that you can actually get a lot of benefit from the new search capability if you're doing a lot of search intense stuff. And then reduce storage costs. This is a good one because there's shredded storage. There's other IT improvements that actually help with not only network traffic, but actually storage. So you're not saving the full version every time and things like that. And then the final one is, how many people are thinking about the cloud deployment option at some point? Okay, about maybe 20% of you. So the idea is that if you're on 2010 now, but you're not ready to go to the cloud right away, 2013 might be a good stepping stone because you'll be closer version-wise. One of the interesting things that Microsoft is doing in the cloud, they're not revving every 3 years like your product, SharePoint 2007, 2010, 2013, like you do. They're actually revving literally almost every week, which is insane. They do code changes and push them out. And so what that does is it makes the deltas very, very small, but it makes it very easy to upgrade things because you just have these little incremental changes over time. And over 3 years, you actually get lots of changes. But little by little, it actually makes it easier. Your job is tougher because you've got 3 years and maybe even more of stuff you need to tackle and conquer. So getting to 2013 gets you closer version-wise to what's in the cloud today, which is really SharePoint 2015 or whatever it's going to be called, already running in the cloud to some extent. Because as you noticed from the keynote and probably a lot of the sessions, Microsoft has a cloud-first feature deployment strategy now, which means it used to be when Microsoft first started doing cloud stuff in SharePoint Online, they'd give you guys the SharePoint 2010 bits, and then they'd go try to figure out how to put it in the cloud. Now, they're going to make the changes in the cloud and get them tested there in Office 365, for example, and then they're going to bake them into an on-premises release that comes out maybe every 2 to 3 years or whatever the release cycle is. All right, so moving to Office 365 is going to be a much easier proposition from 2013 than it would be from 2010 in most cases. All right, so what's new? What do we care about? I'm going to focus on three things that I just mentioned, so social, mobile, and search. And the reason I focus on these is these are the workloads that you'll probably start running into, and you want to start thinking about what does that mean from an upgrade perspective. So again, I'm not going to go into here's how you attach a content database, right? I'll give you upgrade in 2 seconds. How many people are like IT people that are going to have to do the upgrade? All right, here it is in a nutshell. Build a new farm with 2013. Take your content databases, attach them over there. All right, upgrade's done. So what? I mean, it's a little more complex than that, but that's basically what you want to do because it's the only option. There is no in place. There's no sort of gradual. There's no you move it over and put it in a new farm. And there's a lot of subtlety there. But from a technical perspective, I'm not going to go into that level of detail. What I want to go into instead is, okay, what do you need to think about either from an adoption or infrastructure perspective around, let's say, enabling these technologies? So for example, social, first of all, culturally, are you ready for social? And do you deploy SharePoint 2013 social features or do you do Yammer? And again, my recommendation is to deploy Yammer, which isn't really a deployment per se in a lot of ways because you actually have no on-premises version of Yammer, right? It's cloud only. So now the question is, if I have an on-premises deployment of SharePoint and I'm not going to put anything in the cloud yet, I'm going to move it all from 2010 into 2013, keep it in my data center, leave me alone, that kind of thing. But we want to add social. So do we turn on social in 2013 in our data center? Maybe, and it will work, but it probably isn't the long-term roadmap play you want. So the idea is that you enable Yammer in the cloud, and then you use Service Pack 1 for SharePoint 2013 to redirect social requests over to Yammer, essentially, because Yammer will have a little, you know, a little menu option. So let's talk about the challenges there that you need to think about for social. So how does it impact you if you do social, right? One is you have to think about, do you have any compliance considerations where maybe in SharePoint 2013 and all the collaborative content and all that stuff, you have a lot of policies and things like that, where in Yammer, that social content isn't necessarily going to be, you know, held under the same governance model there for that compliance stuff. Another big, 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 big one is identity management. Right now, how many people are on premises right now? So you probably all have AD on premises as well. I start deploying Yammer, it's a completely different sign-in. You can't even federate to it yet, right? Microsoft has that on the roadmap. So you have an identity management issue that you start having to contend with for that cloud deployment. And we'll talk a little bit more about that for if you do put any SharePoint stuff in the cloud or do a hybrid model. And then governance. The key thing here is, why are you actually doing social? Like, what do you expect people to do with it? Because here's the issue you run into. So how many people, when they deployed SharePoint, one of the workloads was people should put some kind of file in it for sharing? Is that pretty common? Nobody does that? No? Team collaboration, maybe? Document management? Anything? So none of that, huh? So a few of you do, I know. You're lying. I could tell. But the idea is that you say, hey, users, we have this great new thing that's going to solve all your problems at SharePoint. So instead of just putting a document in an email and attaching it or, you know, putting it in a file share, we're going to actually give you six more options, which is, you know, your My Site, a Team Site, a portal, you know, all these different places in SharePoint. Now there's OneDrive for Business, all these different things. So the idea is that, okay, well, I can post a document in Yammer too. So now that's like a 74th place I can put a document. So how do I know to put it there and not someplace else? So that's one of the things you want to think about is, how are you going to be using social in your organization if you turn it on? All right, next topic is mobile. So let's talk about mobile. So I mentioned one of the benefits of 2013 is the whole concept of mobile device support, right? Better for things like iPhones and tablets and Windows phones and all that stuff, and multi-browser. And what you actually get is you can actually do a regular browser, or you can actually redirect to a mobile browser, but you have to take care of that interface. So, you know, you have to think about, do we just want to use one form factor and let people, you know, resize it? Or do you go the app route? And there's actually a bunch of apps like the Office mobile apps, and there's some other apps that you can use, which is nice. And you can get them for the, you know, the iPhone, you can get them for Windows Phone, et cetera. So the trick there is most of them only work for SharePoint 2013 or Office 365. So that's another consideration there. Another one is, do you actually use do you do a mobile app? Do you just do the browser, right? What I just mentioned. So how else does it impact me? So bring your own device. How many people have a bring your own device policy at work? Okay, so one of the challenges there then is that SharePoint 2010 doesn't do a great job at, you know, supporting all these different mobile devices, and SharePoint 2013 does a way, way better job at doing that and has the app support, like I mentioned. Another big one is external connectivity. So how many people, without going through a VPN, allow their users to get into SharePoint just over the internet? Okay. How many people think that might be something they need to do very soon? Okay, and here's why. That, you know, we're seeing more and more people just wanting to get a device and, you know, connect up and just connect and not having to VPN in or anything like that, right? And if you look at the Office 365 model, that's the model, right? I can go straight to the internet over like a SSL connection. And, you know, maybe I have to authenticate, or maybe there's two-factor authentication, something like that, which actually, you know, is my sort of second security level instead of the VPN. So you want to think about that. You know, do I turn off the VPN and expose SharePoint to the outside world, so that there's this blur now between what's an intranet, what's an extranet, and what's the internet, right? Or, you know, what is addressable inside or outside? That distinction is becoming blurred a lot, because you want just universal connectivity, so you have to tackle the issue in other ways, like two-factor authentication, for example. The other thing you need to think about is, you know, do you use the Office 365 model, which is, you know, a fully qualified domain name without a VPN, like I mentioned? So how many people actually use short names internally to get to SharePoint? Anybody still doing that? So the issue with that is that that's not an internet addressable URL, right? So you have to think about, okay, all of my internet URLs and SharePoint URLs in general should be fully qualified so that you know, go down that road of a fully qualified name instead of a short, like, host name. And again, that's so that you can address it from anywhere, and it's internet addressable at that point. And that's another thing you need to think about, where that's not a 2013 requirement at all, but if you're going to bother going to 2013, you probably want to make it so that your farm is ready for the next bunch of things, like mobile devices where you can externally, you know, connect from the outside world. You have fully qualified addresses so you can, you know, do the same. And users just expect it to work, right? More and more, you know, let's say you hire someone new, they're going to take their mobile device and connect it up to SharePoint and be like, hey, why isn't this working, right, if it's not working? So there's an expectation level that everything's internet accessible, et cetera. All right, and then for search, a couple of quick key things. How many people are running Fast for SharePoint? Okay, so you know Fast for SharePoint requires a bunch of separate servers and all that, right? The nice thing about SharePoint 2013 is you can actually consolidate your Fast infrastructure down just to a regular SharePoint, you know, app tier model, right? So that you can actually, you know, not necessarily have to deploy multiple servers like you do that are separate on Fast. But there's a trade-off, right? You actually don't have to do the separate Fast servers, but now Office Web Apps requires its own set of servers. So you can't put that on the same machine as the SharePoint environment, because Office Web Apps isn't a SharePoint thing anymore. Technically, it's a standalone service that SharePoint uses. And that's how the infrastructure is different in that respect. Okay, so going back to search, a lot of great new features. What do I need to think about for search, right? What does my topology look like? I just mentioned if you have search using Fast today. Content search web part. This is something that it's a great feature. Everybody know what this feature does? Anybody? So how many people know what the content query web part is? Okay, so I'll explain what the content query web part is. Aggregation is a really important part of portals typically, right? Where, you know, maybe I have a whole bunch of project sites, for example, or I have a whole bunch of intranet sub-websites, and I want to roll up stuff to a homepage or something like that, project information, announcements, whatever it is. And the content query web part is a great out-of-the-box web part for going across different lists and libraries and, frankly, sites within a site collection to do a query that can do things like filter based on a content type and aggregate things into, you know, one web part. And that's an out-of-the-box feature. It's great. The trick is you can't go across site collections. So what the content search web part does, instead of asking for a real-time query against the content in the content database directly, it does a query against the search index. And the search index has gone and looked at all site collections everywhere. So now I can actually fake, essentially, a query across all the different site collections using the search index, which is a powerful feature. So then I can do aggregation, right, within SharePoint without having to limit myself to what's inside one site collection. Now, here's the downside, which is you have to make sure your index is refreshed often, which requires a lot of processing power potentially. And the actual search itself, depending on the size of your index, you know, can be pretty powerful or, you know, processor intensive, let's say. So that's one of the things you want to make sure is that if you have people developing applications using that you take note of what it, you know, how it might impact. Microsoft actually in the cloud, it took them a year at least to enable the content search web part in the cloud because they were concerned about, you know, performance and things like that, to make sure that you're only getting your search results from a security perspective, but then it was performant as well, right? And the nice thing now is that is an Office 365 feature as well. Search is also central to a user experience, so you want to make sure that you're doing things well. And the reason that's important is that how many people think, going from 2010 to 20, how many people think search is awesome in 2010? Wow, that was, anyone? How many people think upgrading to 2013 with all the Fast integration baked in and stuff will solve all their search problems? You guys are smart, because it won't, right? And here's the thing, search is way better in 2013, but it still relies on the content For example, the number one reason, and I went over this yesterday, the number one reason users think search doesn't work well is it shows, for example, the title property in search results where the title property might be bogus, right? It might be left over from an old document. So search is actually doing exactly what it's supposed to, but the content's terrible. So that's just an issue that you want to contend with, which is maybe it's not upgrading the technology that's going to help things. Maybe it's getting your content happier, right? And, you know, combining that with the upgrade is going to help. So don't, as IT folks, don't underestimate your power to help things, not just through technology, but through the cleanup process and all that, which, you know, maybe that's not your favorite thing to do, but it's a fact of life. And then users expect it to be perfect. If you're rolling out something new and it's different, there's this formula, right, which is adoption only exists if the value that people get is greater than the change you've put on them. In fact, anybody know what the ratio is of value, additional extra value they're getting over the change you're inflicting needs to be for good adoption? It's 10x, right? So the idea is that if you move my button from left to right, I better get 10 times the awesomeness and benefit from changing the way I, you know, do my job. And that's a hard thing to do. So you want to think about that again when you roll things out. So I mentioned the title property. Again, that's something you might want to clean up. And, you know, I could talk to you after if you want to know what I'm talking about there. So what you want to do from a what's new is identify specifically where SharePoint's going to benefit you, because otherwise it's sort of a waste of time to upgrade. All right, so let's talk about if you're on 2010 now, what you need to think about going forward to 2013 or the cloud for that matter, right? So the first question is cloud or on-premises, and I think probably 20% of you said, that 20% of who is thinking about going to the cloud, are you thinking about doing it now or maybe a later version? How many now? Okay, and how many maybe next time? Okay, why now, I'm curious. Anybody wanna share why they're gonna do that? Social. Gotcha, so you said, you know what? Let's not do NewsGator, let's wait until Microsoft figures it out kind of thing. Yeah, so just because Yammer's in the cloud, why would you move all of SharePoint to the cloud? I'm just playing devil's advocate. Okay, so that's good reasons. Okay, so let's go through the choices. So there's sort of not two, right? It's cloud or on-premises, but really it's on-prem, which you have today, a lot of you. There's move it whole hog to Microsoft, which is Office 365, let them deal with everything and provide the service to me. But then there's the, you know, I do want to go to the cloud, but I have a whole bunch of full trust apps. How many people have a lot of full trust code running on their servers? Okay, not that many, actually. So I might have a good reason, like I want to manage the content myself and I don't want Microsoft in their cloud managing it. I want to keep it in, you know, Rackspace's cloud or something like that. Or I have a lot of full trust code that I need to run, but I want to move it out of my data center, right? So that's the hosted model. And I would do that on something like Azure maybe, you know, or I could do it in a remote data center. And then there's hybrid, which is I'm going to do a little bit of both. How many people have already planned and thinking about hybrid? Okay, and is that because of the Yammer thing or something else? I'm curious. Anybody? Yeah. Oh, okay, so you guys are doing number three, but with AWS, Amazon, okay. Okay, so cloud on Amazon and then hybrid, meaning on-premises in your environment. And then why did you decide to split one into, you know, what workloads are you putting in each and why? Got it. Yeah. So you want to make sure you have the connectivity between your line of business systems and SharePoint so you have that on-premises. And then the things you don't need the connectivity, you can just put it in the cloud. Yeah. Okay, so let's look at option number one. So how many people, you said most of you are going to stay on-premises, right, in your upgrade? Okay, so let's talk about that. So let's talk about a few things. The topology, is that going to change significantly? Your logical architecture in SharePoint, is that going to change significantly? Things like, you know, end-user training and the UX metaphors that SharePoint uses, developer tools, right? So these are four important topics that you need to think about in consideration. You know, not just, hey, let's reattach my content database, like I mentioned before, which takes, you know, 5-10 minutes, right? Yeah. Or 5 to 10 weeks, depending on the size of your content database. All right, so we really have the same topology we had before, right? So nothing really changes there. The key things that are different, search is not separate, right? The FAST we talked about, Office web app is a completely separate thing. And then you have these workflow manager servers that are, you have to actually deploy them as sort of one of them or three of them, that kind of thing. And what they do is they, you know, manage task aggregation and other things. So the idea is that you want to make sure you're taking that into account. Those are sort of the new topology differences, right? So you've got the same sort of concept where the funny thing is, really, SharePoint, there's no such thing as a WFE app in SQL, right? There's a such thing as a SharePoint box and a SQL box. SQL runs SQL Server, and then you've got SharePoint. Because really, the WFE role just means that you haven't turned on the other services and you have traffic coming into it. But the funny thing is, you know, what Microsoft does in the cloud, every server is pretty much exactly the same. It's just running all roles to make it, you know, as flexible as possible. And so what you want to do is think about, you know, do I really need to have this segmented sort of tiered architecture? Because at the end of the day, it's sort of mythical anyway to some extent. But it looks good in drawings, right? The other thing is you might want to do things like if you're doing lots of crawling, you know, have the WFE role enabled on the index server, but have it just crawl itself so that you don't impact, you know, web traffic to users and things like that. But at the end of the day, your topology is basically the same. So I mentioned that, so the whole concept of, you know, the web and app and all that makes not a big difference. And then logical architecture, again, that hasn't changed either. The same fundamental sort of logical containment model, right? Which, by the way, how many of you explain this to users, right? So I would, and you're laughing, but you probably don't want to talk about farms and web apps because they don't really care. But everything below that, where what's the difference between a site collection, a site, a list, and an item, it may be crystal clear to you guys what that containment model is, but it's not necessarily clear to all your, especially your power users, because that actually helps from a sort of a conceptual perspective that, you know, the reason I can do things like set permissions that cascade down and, you know, I manage things and I can't go across site collections for certain reasons, that's a really important concept when people are thinking about the way they manage their content. And really, we're at the point where there's no such thing as, you know, business without IT anymore, because technology really enables business. I mean, look at Amazon putting, you know, regular stores out of business because technology is their business, essentially. But it's the same with users. Everybody's a content manager now, and you want to make sure people are thinking about how, you know, the containment model in SharePoint actually works, which, by the way, hasn't changed, which is a good thing because it makes it easier for you to, you know, move forward because you're not having to come up with this new partitioning mechanism. So if we look at sort of, this is an old picture from 2010, intentionally, and the idea is that, I'm not sure if you can see it, but let's say this is my infrastructure. It's a single farm, let's say. How many people have a single farm? How many people have multiple farms? Okay, what's, shout out a few reasons why you have multiple farms. Okay, how many people, so QA and dev, great reason for multiple farms. How many people have multiple production farms? Okay, why? Extranet, okay, so you actually have one in the DMZ and one internally, right? Most people, that's the reason. Anybody that's not the reason? Licensing. Enterprise Cal and Standard Cal. Oh, boy. Good old Microsoft. Yes? Okay, so people got left behind. Oh, okay, that's cool. So you have a version. Cool, I like it. That's a good way to, no. We're not picking on you, you know. But what you're saying is version, meaning you have a 2007 farm and a 2010 farm, which is valid. I mean, there's things that might not work on 2010 yet or something, or they need to make sure their content's happy, or to your point, they're not ready to move yet. So, and that happens a lot. Any other good reasons? Anybody? Multiple locations. Okay, so you want it to be fast and local, like as in good performance because it's physically nearby. Anybody else? Yeah. Oh, different groups are sort of managing their own from an ownership perspective, like divisions and stuff. Why would a business group want their own farm? Isn't there enough to manage in the world that, like, you know, my life isn't busy enough. I think I want a SharePoint farm to manage. Whoever says that? So I actually have a funny story. I went to a company, and I hope nobody works here, there from here, but I won't mention their name. But they probably had maybe 1,000 people employed in their company. And I'm gonna give the book away right now. Raise your hand, don't shout it out, to guess how many production SharePoint farms they had. What? Raise your hand, right here. 10, a little higher than that. Who said 16? I'll give it to you, even though you shouted it out. It was 16 production farms, and here's why. They had a very empowerment culture, right? Empowerment culture means, you know, go run off and figure it out, and you're empowered to. So every business group, every business unit was empowered, which, you know, the corollary to empowered is not governed, right? It's just like, hey, you know, I'm going to give you a car. Feel empowered. You know, drive across the freeway, perpendicular to everyone else. Drive down backyards, you know. That's probably not the empowered they were thinking about, right? Empowered is you get to drive anywhere you want, but follow these rules. Well, they forgot to do the follow these rules part. So every group had their own farm. And they actually had a central data center, which was cool. So they did have central IT. But here's what IT did. All they did was power and cool the server and keep the green light from turning into a red light, right? And then the business unit's like, oh, cool, we have SharePoint. So there's this like chasm in the middle for support and upgrades. So they were running into a problem, and the business group called the central thing, and they're like, sorry, the green light's still on, right? True story. And then the people called Microsoft and said, hey, I think this might be a bug or something. Microsoft says, what service pack are you running? And they're like, what's a service pack, right? Because they're the business. So Microsoft said, well, we can't support you because there's a service pack, and you have to be up on the latest service pack because it probably fixes the problem. So my job was to go in and rationalize, number one, your governance model and your center of excellence model or whatever has this huge gap of, like, how do you support not just SharePoint infrastructure, but all the users and, you know, change over time, change management, app governance, IT governance, information management, all this stuff. Plus, why the heck do you have 16 farms? Right? And so we rationalized it down to 2 farms, which is kind of a lot of where you guys went. So this is pretty common. Let's say we're going to take 1 farm. How many people have this situation where they've got maybe 3 web apps where you're looking at, you know, intranet content, my sites, and maybe team sites, something like that? How many people have 1 web application? Let's assume I'm talking about 1 farm. 1 web application. Wow. 2. 3. 4. 5? More than 5. Oh. 15, okay. So here's my recommendation going forward in 2013. Guess how many web applications I want you to have? 1. There's no need for more than 1, unless you have a need. And what I mean by that is, you see where I'm coming from here. But most people say, but the drawing said, it said web app, you know, intranet. It said web app, my sites. In fact, it said on TechNet that my sites on the web app were separate, were best practice, and blah, blah, blah. Best practice is crap, right? TechNet's usually wrong. Just 2 things you need to know. I just call it like it is. And then team sites, separate web app. So in this drawing, there's no good reason why these things are on different web. Like, put them all on 1. There's no good reason. In fact, moving forward, again, unless you have a compelling reason why you're saying, all right, Scott, let me talk it through with you why I need multiple, then I'll say it's okay. So you have to call me first if you're going to do more than 1. So promise me, I'll give you my number. I'll talk you off the ledge. So am I saying that you shouldn't do more than 1 ever? No. I'm saying just make sure you have a compelling reason. And some compelling reasons are things like, well, it's on a different farm, so obviously I have more than 1 because they're, you know. But another, you know, there's authentication reasons, but really at the end of the day, SharePoint 2013 solves those in a lot of ways because you could do multi-mode authentication. There's a lot of different reasons why you don't need more than 1. So kick the habit of lots of web apps and get down to 1 or close to 1. Because again, simple is better than not simple. So how does this translate to 2013 or the cloud, right? Well, if you think about the way this diagram is, drawn, it's focused on workloads. So there's a publishing workload, which is the intranet. There's a MySites workload, which today is now OneDrive for Business. So if you think about MySites in the past and storage, in going forward, you're thinking about OneDrive for Business. So how many people have heard about OneDrive for Business this week? Right? So the whole concept is it's what used to be the storage on your MySite host where everybody gets their own site collection. Of course, that still exists, but the concept really now is OneDrive for Business is what you really want to provide is a place for file storage for every one of your employees, right? And that's what OneDrive for Business is. So what's interesting is Microsoft is enabling something like, hey, you know what? Let me just push that storage into the cloud. I'm never going to need customization. I'm never going to need anything like that. It's just a dumping ground, frankly, for individual employee files, right? So let's put that in a way that, I can sync it offline to my little, offline store up to 20,000 items, 25 gig of content. So what I can do going forward maybe is say, you know what? I'm going to keep my intranet on premises because I have a lot of custom code there, but I'm going to push my OneDrive for Business, formerly my MySite content, up to the cloud, and I'm going to put my team sites up to the cloud, and maybe I'll do a hybrid model. So just something to think about. But guess what? If you're doing it on premises, which a lot of you are, then all these would still be on-prem, but then OneDrive for Business would be something you need to, take into account. Am I going to provide this service? I could still keep it shut off, that kind of thing. So it's very, very similar to 2010 in terms of what kind of services and all that, but I would consolidate web apps and think about maybe putting some of it in the cloud if you don't need to manage it. That's the concept, right? All right, what else? Same UX metaphors. The nice thing is pages, web parts, ribbons are pretty much the same thing. The issue is everything's an app. How many have actually played with 2013 at all? Okay. So one of the things that's a little weird is that a user, when they want to create like a new document library in a site, they don't say add library anymore like in 2010. You say add an app. And then you go to the document library app. Okay? So that can be confusing to users because they're like, why is a document library an app? Like, does everything have to be an app? Like, when I go to the kitchen, is it like the mayo app? And I get the, the knife app? Like, Microsoft is overloading the word app a little bit here, I think. But you'll see why. It's because Microsoft, when they're componentizing what SharePoint can do, every little component with functionality is an app. And that's really the app model. So it might be really confusing to users at first, but something you want to take note of. Developer tools. How many people do custom stuff on their farm? So developer tools are pretty much the same. You get Visual Studio, you've got SharePoint Designer, right? The difference, though, is everything's an app now going forward. Not everything. You could still deploy full trust solutions. But sandbox code has been deprecated. So the idea is that this great idea that was introduced in 2010 for not having to deploy full trust, Microsoft's like, nah, we're just kidding. You don't want to do that anymore. So take note of that. It'll still work, but it may not work forever, right? So hint, hint, might not want to do that anymore. The other thing is, if you're developing apps today, stop doing full trust apps if you can help it, right? Start building RESTful applications using JavaScript and, something you can get to over the internet, et cetera. Because again, if you do eventually move to the cloud someday, let's say, you just want to be prepared, right? And so, it doesn't mean you can't do full trust solutions, but you want to make sure you're prepared going forward so you're not writing new things that you have to refactor in short order. So the nice thing about moving, especially with an on-premises deployment, is that you can actually leverage most of your investment you have today, right? The memory requirements are slightly higher with 2013. So depending on the age of your servers and whatnot, I recommend, how many people virtualize their environment anyway? So this might also be a good time if you don't virtualize your environment, if you're using physical servers today. 2013 upgrade might be a good opportunity to say, you know what, maybe we'll virtualize this. And that way you can do things like set up some virtual servers, build a 2013 farm, move your content databases and whatever over, and then you can decommission those old servers. So it's another thing you might want to do as part of this. And just ask yourself, is there any part of this I might consider moving to the cloud someday? Just because it's a reality, right? So you have to think about that. All right. What's option two? So we're ending at 10:15, is that right? Say, I'm glad I wore my watch because this thing still says I have 75 minutes left. So If you guys want to hang out all day, we could do that, but I'm sure you'll get sick of me by then. You're probably sick of me now. Okay, move to Office 365. So the key benefits, you don't have to manage your own servers, right? CapEx of buying all this stuff turns into OpEx. You just pay monthly, let's say. And then you get frequent incremental updates, so you don't have to deploy like these massive changes every 3 years. There's incremental changes, which users, it's much easier to say, hey, I'm moving the key holder like 2 inches to the right. Instead of being like, hey, honey, I just redecorated our whole house and there's no kitchen anymore, right? Like, little by little, people, you know, accept changes, but the big ones are harder to do, so that's actually a benefit. Challenges, though, are, you know, if you're used to having full control of your farm, you don't have farm control anymore, right? You're now a tenant admin. So does everybody know what a tenant administration is? Do you want me to say it? Anybody want me to explain it? No? Okay, I saw some yeses. So right now, you know how we have farm or farms in some cases, and then web app, and then site collection, right? What Office 365 gives you is farm, which you can't touch, right? And then there's web app, which you can't touch. And then there's tenant, which is essentially on one farm, essentially. Well, let's throw web app out. It's really farm and then site collection. In between farm and site collection, there's this tenant. And the idea is that you can't touch the farm, but it's not that you go all the way down to site collection administration, right? What Microsoft did is they took central admin and they took about half of it and made essentially a custom interface for tenant administration. So you can still do things like manage your search service, manage user profiles, and it's the same interface as what's in central admin. But you don't get to do things like what services are on which server. You just don't get to touch that because Microsoft's in charge of that, not you, right? No full trust code deployed to the cloud, period, right? And you need to trust the cloud, meaning I have some clients who their data is sensitive, right? Data are sensitive, and then what they do is they say, you know what, we'll manage our data, thank you, right? We're good with that. We're going to keep on premises because of that. So your key questions are, if you're moving to the cloud, how are you going to authenticate people, right? If you're a really small company with 10 people, you don't have to have any on-premises identity management solution. You just use Microsoft's sort of AD in the cloud, and you manage all your identities there. But if you have, even if you put all of SharePoint in the cloud, you probably still have an on-premises Active Directory environment for identity management, right, to some extent. So now you have to think about a federation model for single sign-on, directory synchronization, that kind of thing. And do I move all my workloads? Meaning, like, let me think through this. Like, team sites, no problem. We don't customize those. The whole OneDrive for Business thing, sure. Oh, shoot, that HR thing we built is a full trust solution. Guess I can't move that, right? So you want to think through that. And then, do I lose any integration? So let's say you're running Exchange Server. How many people run Exchange Server as well on premises? So let's say you're running Exchange internally and you're running SharePoint as well. And let's say you move SharePoint into the cloud, but for some reason you want to keep Exchange. There's some integration there that you might lose, like task roll-ups and things like that, where those servers need to be in the same data center. And because they're both in Office 365, it'll work. Because they're both in your data center together, they'll work. But if they're separate, they won't, so you need to think about that. And there's not a lot like that, but there's some things that you might need. So let's talk about the move to the cloud on the hosted server model. So this is the Azure, Amazon, whatever, right? You get the Elastic Cloud. The great thing about the cloud is that not only are you not managing the servers, but typically you're like, hey, you know, we need 5 more servers because SharePoint is, you know, hot diggity dog, it's popular, right? Boom, whatever service you're using spins them up for you, you're in pretty good shape, right? You don't need to manage the server infrastructure, you still have that OpEx model, and you can run full-trust solutions because basically what this model is, if you want to imagine it, because I'm an analogy guy, what Azure and Amazon both do is they offer you a hotel room. Okay? You pay $5 a month or whatever it is, right? Cheap hotel. And what you do is you get a key to the hotel and it's a big room. And whatever you do in that room, that's your, you know, they don't want to know. In fact, I don't want to know what you do in your room either. So, but the idea is that, hey, if you want to run SharePoint in there, hey, go to town. If you want to screw up your SharePoint environment in there, go to town, right? You're in charge of SharePoint 100%. But the hotel room and all the services that come into the room, like water and plumbing, and, you know, well, I guess water is plumbing, but electricity, cable, all that stuff, that's provided by the hotel for your room. And that's the idea of Azure, Amazon. Essentially, you get this virtual machine in the cloud, if you will, that you're in full control of your SharePoint environment. And please don't share what you do in your hotel room. Okay. Key challenges. You still need to manage servers, like I said, right? That's not the job of the hotel. And there's no good path to Office 365, because what you've done is you've moved to the cloud, but you haven't really, you're probably still doing full trust solutions. You're not relinquishing control of, you know, managing SharePoint itself. So really what you're doing is you're saying, okay, I want a cloud solution, but I'm not going to let Microsoft manage SharePoint for me. So key questions there are very similar, right? You have the identity management, what workloads should you use, and do you lose that integration again because now you're not in the same data center anymore, potentially, unless you move both Exchange and SharePoint. And then there's the hybrid model. Hybrid is nice because you can do things like push some services into the cloud. This sort of gets you there if you don't, you know, want to go all in right away. Key challenges there is now you have two environments. You have, you know, the local stuff. A nice workload is doing things like maybe having SharePoint on-premises for production. But for dev and test, why do you need to manage those servers? Why not just put those in Azure, for example, right? Like, you can, you know, just spin those up when you need them. Like, do you really need the dev integration environment all the time? No, you just spin it up when you want to do, like, something, and then you tear it down and you're done, right? So that might be a good workload for that. And then identity management, because, again, remember, if you have two environments, you want to make sure you're managing something like EDFS. And then things like hybrid search, you know, you have two searches going, and Microsoft has pretty good solutions, but it's not perfect, where you still have two different search results, for example, to contend with, potentially. And then where do I put my workloads? It's all the same questions for that as well. All right, so what should you do today? Okay? And before I forget, come up, whoever won the book back there. You don't have to come up now, you can come up afterward. So I just want to make sure we remind you. All right, so what should you prepare for now? So one is, think about your logical design, right? Don't lift up and move over to the new environment the same crap you have today, right? Take an effort to clean it up first and then move it. It's much easier to, you know, move a cleaned up environment than it is to, or take the opportunity to create a new information architecture or logical design in the new environment if it makes sense, if you've grown, for example. Consider things like, and I talk about this a lot, like, should you be using folders and metadata? You know, do you use required values? All these things for your content to make it cleaner, because the perception of the success of your adoption, you know, of the new environment isn't just the technology, it's going to be how you use it as well. And then what I call governed empowerment. So this is the whole, well, let's do an analogy. So the analogy is, and this is the analogy I use, so you might have heard it before, but, you know, we had these thing called cars. And the first cars, it didn't really matter if you had many rules because there's only one car, so you just sort of go. And there's not a lot of danger, you know, because there's two parts, right? You train people how to drive a car, and then you tell people what they should do with the car. Well, if there's not a lot of rules yet because there doesn't need to be, then, you know, you just drive the car. But more and more cars take the road, it matters more, right? There's more risk involved. So you have to come up with rules so you don't have crashes. Very simple rules like, pick which side of the road you want to drive on, you know, stop at intersections, all that stuff. The idea being that if you don't have those rules, how many people have a really good governance model in their organization today? How many people have no governance model? How many people have a really, really incredibly complex one? Yeah, don't do that either. So, and the analogy I use here with this is that with a car, to extend this, you teach someone how to drive the car, right? But that's only half the battle, because you probably, when you first teach them, you go to some empty lot to make sure they don't run people over, and you teach them how to drive the car, and then they're good. And then you don't just stop there. You say, by the way, here are the rules. Like, you stop at stop signs, you see the red light on the top, that also means stop, you know, all these other things. And then there's guidance. Guidance is like, you know, I wouldn't take the I-5 to the airport, I would go a different way, right? And the idea is the combination of that training, the must-do rules, laws, and the guidance actually help. And so couple that upgrade with putting this stuff in place, right? Because if you don't, it's probably going to be a wasted upgrade. So really, you know, it's just rules of the road, right? The governance. And you have to figure out, do you want, you know, the wild west? So a lot of people go from wild, wild west. It's like, yeah, do whatever you want. And they put really strict controls into place. And they say, hey, users, we paid Microsoft to come up with this 485-page governance plan. You should probably read it. And users go, wow, you know, they're never going to read that. So how many people drive cars? I used this analogy yesterday, but okay, just making sure you're paying attention. When you got your driver's license, did you go read every driver's law in your state or country or whatever? There's probably like tens of thousands of pages of laws. No, probably not, right? What'd you do? You got the little like pamphlet at the DMV with the bunny on it, right? And then that's what you, so what you need to do is you need to give your governance rules, the two-page one to your users with the bunny on it, and save your 300-page document for yourself, and how do you distill it down to your users? So remember that when you're putting governance in place and whatnot. And the three kinds of governance you should think about, IT governance, that's things like backing up your servers properly, right? If you're in the cloud, Microsoft does that for you. But then the other two, even if you're in the cloud, you need to be responsible for. So what kind of apps do we build on SharePoint, and how do they get built, and under what rules do we build them? And then information management is things like, how do we govern the quality of our content and teach people how to tag things properly, put things in the right place, all that stuff, right? And the analogy is that information management is like how you train and guide the drivers of the cars. Application management would be like, hey, what if we need to add a new lane? Can we just shut down the whole highway for 6 months and add a new lane? How many people think that would go over well? So imagine if you had to put a full trust solution into place and you have to shut down the farm and all this stuff. I've seen that a lot, right? And what's your regression testing model for all that? And then there's maintenance, like maintenance on bridges, maintenance on your car itself. What's your IT maintenance schedule? So you want to think about that. And really, all they do at the end of the day is manage your risk, right? You want to reduce your risk. That's why you have these things. The risk of driving head-on to another vehicle is why we pick one side or the other to drive on, right? So there's a reduced risk of actually crashing into someone else. So governance, at the end of the day, is really three things. People, process, technology. If you're doing governance without all three, you're probably going to fail. Just wanted to take note of that and remind you. And just stop before you upgrade and say, are you doing this well? How many people think they're doing all this stuff really well in their organization? So make sure, then, don't just upgrade your SharePoint environment. Consider all this stuff along with your upgrade, because it matters, right? Think about it. If someone's a really terrible driver, okay, and they're like running over curbs and the rims are busting and you're having to replace it, and they're just unhappy because their car keeps, they have to take it into service because it keeps like stalling and stuff, and you're like, so two things. So, did you get training on how to drive a car? No. Do you change your oil all the time? No. Okay, I'm gonna buy you a Ferrari, okay? And it's Ferrari 2013, right? Which is way better than Toyota 2010, okay? But it's gonna solve all your problems because it's better, it has more features, it's shinier, right? No, they're just gonna hit the curb faster and they're gonna like totally blow the engine faster. What you need to do is train them how to like use it right, drive right, follow the rules, change the oil, like whatever the maintenance things are that you need to do, and the right way to use the tool. And you can give them a better car if you think that's gonna happen, right? So don't think the new technology, the shiny car, is gonna fix other problems that aren't really technology related. So just make sure you're doing that. All right, so a couple of key things here. I mentioned you wanna organize your content, manage your risk better, right? You also wanna do things like, make sure search, how many people review search reports regularly and adjust, okay? Start doing that. Somebody in your organization should do that because it's gonna help search, and you can uncover why search isn't good. How many people survey their users on a regular basis? Start doing that too, okay? And if you're not doing these things, I'm gonna come to your house and yell at you. So, social relies on culture, so again, don't roll it out unless you have the culture and governance in place and training, like I mentioned. What's your app strategy, right? Are you gonna start writing your apps in a restful way as opposed to full trust now, right? Think about that. And do a couple other things. Get rid of your unused site collection. If you're gonna do an on-premises upgrade, you'll actually get better performance and throughput by cleaning that up, right? Why have the movers move all the junk in your attic if you're just gonna put it in your attic and it's gonna sit there for 20 more years? Clean out your attic and throw it away, and then you don't have to pay the movers, right? That's what you should be doing. Check large lists, right? This is a good opportunity to see if you have lists that aren't partitioned well or don't have indices or things like that, right? Because users might just throw a whole bunch of stuff in there and you might have, 20,000 or 100,000 or whatever that aren't partitioned. By the way, you can put a million items in a list fine as long as you do it right. Get rid of your versions if you don't need them. If you do a content database upgrade with lots of versions, it doesn't slow it down linearly, it slows it down exponentially. So think about, do you really need all those extra versions, and can you, you know, purge some of them? And then finally, just getting rid of web parts that aren't used and broken links and all that stuff. Do that all before you upgrade, because all you're going to do is carry it forward. How many people went to 2010 from 2007 and did like an in-place or something like that? So all the junk that didn't really work well is basically hiding in your 2010 environment, and it's going to come out and destroy you in 2013 if you don't address it now, okay? Maybe not destroy you, but you know. And then establish content ownership, right? Make sure users are engaged with their content and stuff. All right, final thing. Let's talk about your SharePoint journey. And the reason I'm calling it a journey is there's a level of maturity, a level of sophistication, right? We want to train the users before we give them the new Lamborghini. By the way, I used this analogy yesterday, but how many people have utensils in their house to eat with? Anybody? All right, good. We're all on the same page here. So how many people, when they take like the forks out of the dishwasher, they just randomly open a kitchen, you know, like I'll just, this drawer, maybe this cabinet, and I'll just toss them in there, right? People do that, yeah, right? No, you move, think about all the work you did. You move into a new house, beautiful new kitchen. You're like, all right, this drawer, let's measure it. No, this drawer, cabinet. All right, the glasses should go there. This one's near the, all right here is where the forks go, but I'm not even done. I'm gonna get a plastic insert from Target and put it in there and then put the forks in. You went through all that trouble to figure out exactly where things should go, and then you taught your family. Hey, little Johnny, you know, put the forks in here. You'll get in trouble if you don't, right? So that's what you want to make sure you're doing in your organization is making sure people, like for that minor investment, they can find their content later, right? And that journey about how you're thinking about doing that is important. So let's talk to Bob. We didn't forget about Bob, did you? Good. So Bob, this is his SharePoint journey. It's a little hairy, right? But Bob's journey is that he went from 2007 to 2010. He's thinking about 2013 now, right? And what happened last time is that, you know, he switched on some of the social stuff. It really didn't go anywhere. Search results were still bad, even though Microsoft promised the world. People have more devices now. They're mobile now. They want to get to the web via the internet now, right? The site content could be organized better. These are all things that really have nothing to do with the technology, like I said, right? So you want to get that in order before you get the shiny new car. And ongoing love is important, right? SharePoint, the analogy for SharePoint is like it's a free puppy, right? Or maybe you even bought the puppy. Maybe you paid, you know, a breeder to give you a puppy or something. But that's the least cost you'll ever pay for that puppy, right? You have to feed it, walk it, maintain it, go to the vet, all that stuff. Maintain it? You know what I mean. The idea is that with SharePoint, you can't just set it and forget it. You can kind of do that with Exchange, because it's like email flows or it doesn't. SharePoint is not a set and forget, right? You've got to give it ongoing love, and Bob knows that, actually, right? So what Bob did is he realized that he sort of went through four phases, and this is typically the four phases people go through. You know, they deploy something like collaboration, where you're connecting teams, right? Before you go any further, and you probably already have gone further, but you want to make sure that governance and training is there so that people know how to drive the car correctly. They're not running over curbs. They're maintaining their oil, all that stuff. And then you want to think about broadening adoption correctly. So, you know, I would, again, take a step back, breathe, and think about where you want to go. And then finally, integrating SharePoint with business solutions. So that's typically a nice, you know, maturity story. And one of the things we can do, if you want, as a free chat later, I'll be at the Jornada booth later, and if you want to chat about like your journey, about like, okay, where you're going and what you think you should do next, I'm happy to have that chat, and we're giving away an Xbox One so you could win that too. So let's talk about what Bob did mistakenly, we're almost done, is that, you know, he invested a lot in the infrastructure. He bought all these servers, he bought Microsoft software licenses, he got a consultant to do some customization, right? But what did he forget to do, right? He didn't give the ongoing love at first. And if you don't have that care and feeding, like, hey, are things working? Are users happy? Let's survey them. Are we meeting our business objectives? What are our business objectives with SharePoint? Do we even know? Right? Do those things, and because now Bob knows better, he's happy. And because he's happy, he's getting adoption, He's doing his ongoing technical monitoring, so that's the oil change. He's doing his content monitoring, which is, you know, making sure things like content is tagged, there's an owner for everything. He's getting user support in place and training, so they're not just trained on how to drive a car, but why they're supposed to follow certain rules that prevent death or other risk. He put a great experience in place, et cetera. And make sure you have something in place. It's almost like the car manual. What are you doing on a daily, weekly, monthly? How many people have a schedule like this for themselves in SharePoint? I recommend, by the way, this slide actually has some suggested things of what you should do every day, every week, every month. So how many people have actually driven a car? Again, just checking to see if you're there. You know that thing in the glove compartment that you've never looked at? It actually has something very much like the owner's manual. It actually has something like this of like when to change your oil, when to rotate your tires, all that stuff. This is my version for SharePoint, and there's even a bigger one that, you know, I think is in the book or something like that. But make your own. Don't trust me on mine. Make your own and do things on a regular basis. Weekly, look at the search reports. You know, monthly, look at, you know, certain content. Quarterly, do a webcast to make sure you're getting training. And, you know, all these different things, whatever suits your environment. So Bob is happy. You know why Bob's happy? Because he came to the session, and he started thinking about all these things that he probably wasn't thinking about before. And it made him successful, and his users are happy. And he got a raise. Of course he did, come on. And he even got another little one with a little button ribbon thing, you know? And that's all I got, so. And we have 5 minutes for questions if you want. And I want to thank Richard Harbridge for encouraging me to use Bob, because he's a classic Richard character, so. Yeah, question. Yep. Okay, so you have two web apps so that you have two different types of authentication. One is like NTLM and one is FPA? Okay, ADFS. So in SharePoint 2013, all you do is you can put those on one web app, and then there's a setting in central administration essentially that says use, you know, NTLM, ADFS, whatever, or multi-mode, and then it gives you multi-mode choices. So you can actually pick like A and B, or A and C.